The American Library Association, the ALA, is reporting an increase in attempts to ban books across the country in its new report. We look at root causes, repercussions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Their State of America's Libraries special report, it documents 729 attempted bans of about 1,600 titles last year. Many of these bans, they target topics connected to race, connected to LGBTQ issues, history. Bring your thoughts on banned books, on challenged books, where you are, 800-642-1234. Stephanie Warden is Associate Director and Information Literacy Librarian at the Jim Danhill Library at UW-Superior. Stephanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good morning. Let's start with that terminology of challenge versus ban. Challenge books, ones where someone has formally questioned its appropriateness for a particular reason. Banned books, meaning that they've been removed from a library shelf or a school curriculum. Is that an apt description?
It is. Challenge books, generally, somebody has highlighted them and brought them to either the librarian, the administration, and said, this is not appropriate for this reason, that reason, X, Y, Z. Whereas banned books, they have been either removed by the librarian or removed by the administration, and they are no longer accessible to the students at the library or to the patrons at the library.
Do you think it's important to differentiate between these two, challenge books and banned books?
I do. I think that a challenge is one really is a little less severe than a ban, first of all, because it's just people having a conversation at that point. Regardless of how you feel about the reasons that they want to challenge the book, it's important, in my opinion, that we do talk through some of those uncomfortable issues that are uncomfortable for some people that led to that that particular judgment. That can be a great way to see each other's point of view and to negotiate. Well, I didn't interpret it this way. Maybe I should think about it from a different perspective. Whereas a banning, just straight up banning them, means that there's not even a conversation anymore. That it's gone. The book is gone.
The ALA says more books were challenged last year across the country than in previous years. Can you dig into that for us and tell us what the American Library Association is seeing?
Sure. So just some statistics I dug up right before coming on here. As you mentioned, in 2021, we had about 729 challenges. But in the years leading up to that, say starting in 2017, we had about 350, 2018, about 350, 2019, about 350. Then 2020, we had only 156. It basically got cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, we come back in 2021 and there's this explosion. Double what it used to be, more than double what it used to be.
What do you think is going on?
There could be a number of things, in my opinion. I don't think it's any one thing going on. I would think that the pandemic had us doing homeschool and doing work from home. And at the, you know, at that time, parents and children were together, and parents had a really good glimpse into what their children were reading, into what their children were working on in classes, and that might have sparked some of this. Maybe heretofore, some parents weren't aware of all the things going on. I think also, in my opinion, there's a bit of a culture clash going on in the United States, and so there's maybe some push and pull in that way, especially about what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate from several different perspectives.
We can go into this a little bit more, this culture clash, but I want to reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk with UW-Superior librarian Stephanie Warden about book banning and getting your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Book challenges, they have a long history, you know, in our country with calls for, you know, coming from regardless of where you are on the political spectrum. But is there, do you think, a troubling political shift now that is cutting to the heart of democracy, as you mention a culture war here?
Sure. This is just my speculation, my personal opinion. But things have become a little bit more polarized, it does seem. And while I'm not sure how dire it is at the moment, the jump in the number of challenges doesn't concern me as much as the jump in the number of actual bans.
Hmm.
When you have a situation where there's not being, the discussion isn't continuing over the material, then that's a little different than just, you know, talking about it and negotiating with each other.
I wonder, are there valid reasons to ban books in your mind?
Oh, definitely. Of course. In particular, I think of challenging issues that somebody may be facing, medical issues or something at home, in which perhaps having a book available for the person who is experiencing that to read would be problematic.
Hmm.
So for example, if a student was having mental health issues, you might not want that student to get a hold of 13 Reasons Why or a book in that particular vein, which has been tagged for, you know, promoting suicidal ideation, things of that nature, because of the way the story goes. And so that might be a legitimate excuse to at least restrict the material, maybe not an outright ban, but at least to restrict the material to other people.
I wonder, is age appropriateness a valid reason for a book ban?
Well, I guess that depends largely on how you're conceptualizing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in a classroom that is, say, just of one particular age group, and the book is not appropriate for that age group, then you could remove it. That would be valid. But if you're in a library that serves, a whole population, or that serves, you know, the whole student body, which can range in ages, you know, pretty vast, then that's less likely to be an appropriate response, in my personal opinion. Then you're restricting everybody from it, not just the people that, you know, need to be protected. So you might put it in a separate section, or do other things like put it in display just for people of a certain age, or, you know, things like that. But I don't know that you would want to ban it.
We have a question here from Travis in Michigan, called in, couldn't stay. And Travis says that they've seen on Facebook libraries throwing away books, putting them into dumpsters. How is that different from banning books? Is that related at all? Travis asks.
Well, I mean, that's also an interesting one. Typically, when you see that, it's because there's a weeding project going on. Although I can't say for sure that in every instance that there aren't some in there from a banning project or a challenge project kind of thing. But for the most part, weeding we do in order to keep the collection healthy. Things that are outdated, things that have misinformation, things that are damaged beyond repair. Sometimes libraries have to get rid of the old in order to make room for the new and the things that are in better shape. So I would say that it's probably not, if you're seeing whole dumpsters full of books, it's unlikely to be a ban issue, more of a weeding issue.
Mm-hmm. And to ask further questions then as to what is going on in that picture posted on social media, I probably would say.
Yeah, I would say you need to question everything you see. If something is posted that says, look at all these books they're throwing away, and they're trying to provoke an emotional reaction, then you might want to stop and evaluate and ask if there are really, you know, if there are good reasons for that happening.
We're discussing the surge in banned book attempts in our country, what it means at the present, with Stephanie Warden, Associate Director and Information Literacy Librarian at UW-Superior. Bring your perspective, your experience on eliminating a choice to read or not to read. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Stephanie Warden here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at recent instances of both attempted and successful book banning in our country, what it means on The Morning Show. I'm Kay Darcher-Kent. Florida's education department has rejected more than 50 math textbooks, about 40% that were submitted by publishers. It announced in recent days that the textbooks failed to meet Florida's new learning standards or contained prohibited topics like references to critical race theory. Join in at any point. Looking forward to hearing what you think about banned books. 800-642-1234. Stephanie Warden is Associate Director and Information Literacy Librarian at UW-Superior with us for the hour. Stephanie, looking at the group of challenges this year, last year, books, graphic novels, and textbooks, and then you see this news out of Florida, I'm just wondering, why are these types of materials being targeted the most?
That's a great question. You know, of the, looking at 2021, of the top 10 banned or challenged books, I suppose, more than like five of them probably have been chosen because of LGBTQIA content, which is not something new. We've seen that before. So I'm not terribly surprised seeing that particular criteria being picked on for challenging or banning. But I'm having difficulty, as you said, you mentioned the Florida story this morning. I'd read that as well. And I'm having some difficulty connecting what would be the objectionable material in that textbook, in a math textbook specifically. I keep coming back to that comment I made earlier about parents were far more involved there for a year. And we also had some other things going on the national stage that were, you know, showing us trending towards some of these discussions. And so I can't help but think that had at least a part to do with it, where people became far more involved than they were before in children's education and maybe perceived some of the things in there, in my opinion, as a threat. It's hard to say.
Parents have really watched their schools too become so torn over mask mandates, over vaccines, over inclusive education. I wonder if these conflicts, these local conflicts, and that now what we're seeing over book bans are a bit associated with those other really, really difficult conversations that school districts have been having at their meetings and elsewhere.
I think that's a fair assessment. A lot of times when things are uncertain, and things have been very uncertain for the past few years, I think people look for things that they can control. And something that they can control is whether or not they wear a mask, whether or not they teach a certain book, whether or not a book appears in a collection. Those are, I don't want to say easy, but those are kind of low-hanging fruit of things that you can control. And exerting that, I think, brings a little bit of comfort.
Let's bring on Jane now in Suamico. Jane, hi. What would you like to add?
I'd like to suggest the idea that before a book can be banned, for example, by a school board or part of a curriculum or in a library, that those who are demanding the book be banned have read the book.
Jane, thank you for that. Stephanie, what do you make of that observation and that suggestion from Jane?
I think that's 100% fair. If we're not willing to interrogate the source material, then we probably shouldn't be doing anything with it until we have. It's as an information literacy librarian, especially, I advocate that everybody read and critically examine the material through whatever lens they need to in order to best understand it. And that would be an ideal situation if the people voting on the bannings or the people voting on the challenges could get together, read the book, explain it to each other, examine it together. That would be an ideal situation.
Jane, thank you for that. And I'm wondering, there are books in the early 2000s, books dating back decades, that over the course of time are perhaps less controversial or no longer controversial. Do you think that, you know, the banned books of today will ultimately be accepted in our country? Or how does that work, that evolution?
That's an interesting question. I think that for every place, it's probably a little bit different, but a book that is banned today because of something that's maybe a hot topic in the media, or, you know, is tied to something else right now, tomorrow that could just dissipate. It only takes a change in administration sometimes, or a change in the population of the student body to spark that sort of change. And a banned book might be either quietly or ceremoniously re-added to a collection after a suitable period of time.
How does your university library approach a book challenge compared to, say, K-12 libraries or K-12 public schools?
You know, we are truly very lucky, because in the universities in general, we only get probably less than 1% of book challenges come to us. Whereas, you know, in school libraries this year, it was something like 44%. If we were to get a challenge, then we would consider it carefully through the lens of our collection development policy. That's why we spend a great deal of time fleshing out this policy, so that we can say, okay, this is something that adheres to the policy. We hear your concerns, but according to this policy that we've developed and voted on, it's something that we want to retain. Or perhaps, you know, if we get something that is a little bit more sensitive, for example, the treatment of a particular book that, you know, that needs to be protected, mm-hmm. we might place it in the archives, restrict access to make sure that it's, that it is only accessed by people, you know, in a place where the book will be safe, things of that nature.
Who has final say in whether a book is banned?
Well, it depends. Mm-hmm. I think that in school libraries, that could be the principal, it could be the librarian, or it could be the school board. Like, that's what we saw in Tennessee with Mouse, was the school board made the final call on that. So here, that would probably be our library director, but that could also come from above, in my opinion. We've never experienced it while I've been here.
And Mouse being this Pulitzer Prize winning graphic novel about the Holocaust, what, you know, as we talk about this book here for just a moment, what do you see in it, and how does it inform how you see book banning?
Oh, Mouse is a devastating graphic novel, and I see a lot of history in it, and history that hasn't been dressed up or sanitized. Even though it is being told in kind of a somewhat whimsical way, with the Jewish people being symbolized by mice and the Nazis being symbolized by cats, it's this very real, very raw telling of a history of a household and of the events of the Holocaust, some events of the Holocaust, and it seems problematic to want to get rid of something that tells this story in such an accessible way.
Talking about book banning with UW Superior Stephanie Warden, Associate Director and Information Literacy Librarian. Let's bring in Marianne now from Superior. Hi, Marianne, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm perfectly capable of making a decision for myself on what I would read. I go to our public library in Superior often, and I have never been asked or questioned, would you like to read this book that's possibly going to be banned? When my children were growing up, we would talk about things. And then as a family would make a decision. I really resent it when other people are saying what is appropriate for me or my family or my grandchildren to read.
Marianne, thank you for that. Stephanie, Marianne, wanting that freedom to read or not to read and making that a personal family decision.
That would be my preference if everything worked that way. I too buck at the idea of being told I cannot read this, and so do many people. That's why when a book is banned, you see the sales of that banned book go up, and, you know, there are drives to get the book in the hands of people, and like the readership generally goes up whenever you do a ban. So, yeah.
So you see that a book becomes perhaps even more popular when word circulates that it has been banned in X district or someplace.
Right. Generally, people want to know what all the hubbub's about, and it's also somewhat thrilling to be able to read that thing that's been forbidden. So I think that we see a lot of that. In the case of mouse in particular, I can remember several campaigns going around where people were purchasing copies from independent bookstores in the area in which that ban occurred, and just having them available for free for school children who came in wanting to read the book.
UW-Superior librarian Stephanie Warden stays with us on the intensity and the impact of banning books in the U.S., where it goes from here. Appreciate hearing your personal take. What's coming up for you as you look at banned books? There's a line, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Stephanie Warden after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. UW River Falls held a banned book read aloud event recently. We're exploring why book ban efforts are spreading in our country in light of a new American Library Association report. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the River Falls Journal, last week's read aloud was of Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. Volunteers taking turns, reading it in shifts. It was organized by the English department of UW River Falls. So what's coming up for you on banned books? There's room for you in the conversation, 800-642-1234. UW Superior's Stephanie Warden is Associate Director and Information Literacy Librarian with us for the hour. Let's bring in Sandy now in Lehi, Utah. Sandy, hi, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just wondering, how would you handle a if a parent came in and they were demanding that you ban a book in a library?
So on the, like, a parent comes not with a challenge, but saying, I want you to immediately take it off the shelf right now. Is that what I'm hearing,
correct,
Sandy?
Correct, correct.
How would you handle that encounter, Stephanie?
Sure, and this is hypothetical because, again, we don't see many challenges or bans in higher education. But in that particular instance, I think that I would have to sit with the person, hear their concerns. We would have to talk back and forth about it for a little bit. And then I would take the concerns back to our collection development people, whatever the case may be. Here, we have a collection development librarian, as well as a committee that helps decide that. And then we would have to talk about it internally and consider the information that we've been given. And then we would have to largely rely on the policy that we've collected. If that does not result in a satisfactory resolution, then the patron would be free to take it up to the next level, or we could talk about it some more. But there would have to be a pretty good reason for me to consider taking a book out of the collection just because somebody else wanted it taken out.
I wonder, are librarians getting training on how to have these challenge conversations with patrons?
I believe it's a topic that is sometimes covered, depending on what school you go to for your library degree. But mostly, I haven't come across much except in some conferences, some sessions that are devoted to that. You know, that's a great way to do that professional development. And also some supportive sort of forums in which you can talk about, you know, hey, I've just had a challenge. What should I do? People are very supportive in those forums and they give advice. And the Office of Intellectual Freedom through ALA has a list of resources and a bit of a toolkit to help you navigate some of this stuff. But other than that, it's kind of spread out.
What have you seen by way of librarians giving support and information to fellow librarians who are going through this or who are in a book banning situation or a challenge? Do you see that there is a lot of talk among librarians?
In the groups that I'm in, there are some library-specific groups on Facebook, some library-specific groups on Reddit, places like that, where you can come together and make kind of a makeshift community. And there's always an outpouring of support that is really touching, honestly, because it can feel like you're so alone whenever you're beset by those challenges. And it feels like you're the only one who has this idea that they want to keep the books there for the people who might need them, that kind of thing. And to see other librarians who have been through it, who haven't been through it, but who sympathize, come together and just, sometimes they don't even offer advice. It'll just be, I'm just here to offer you encouragement. I can't say anything that hasn't already been said, you know, that kind of thing. That's a real treasure.
Thank you for sharing that. And Sandy, thank you for the question. Let's bring in Tom now in Sussex. Tom, hi, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I think all this is just insanity that we're talking about banning books. You know, we're talking about banning math books in Florida. You know, what are we trying to do, ban weapons of math instruction, critical ideas like trigonometry and algebra? You know, this is getting to be, as I said, insanity.
Tom, did you say weapons of math in instruction?
Math, yes, of math instruction.
Okay, can we just take a moment here?
Okay. Yeah. You know, I have to wonder, what is the goal of all this? I mean, it's clear that one of the goals is trying to push LGBT people back into the closet. We're seeing states already banning parents from providing medical treatment to their LGBT children. You know, where is this eventually going to go? If we start banning books, you know, the old adage that if we don't know our history, we're doomed to repeat it. Are we going to get to a point where some crazy person's going to throw in a bill trying to legalize slavery again? You know, as I'm saying, this is crazy that we're talking about banning books.
Tom, appreciate, I'm going to just jump in here. Tom, appreciate the call. And, you know, Tom, bringing up sexual identity and sexual orientation, you know, and LGBTQ issues, authors. What are you seeing there in this area of banning and challenges, I wonder, Stephanie?
I'm seeing a lot of, especially children's books, being targeted for challenges and banning. And that's a real shame. There are some also graphic novels having to do with LGBTQIA being targeted. But mostly I would say that these are the popular targets, these children's books, these more accessible graphic novels, and the occasional young adult novel. I don't see it as much in more adult fiction, I guess.
Gender Queer by Maya Kolbabe and All Boys Aren't Blue by George Johnson, the most banned or challenged books, according to the ALA. What do you see going on there?
You know, it's a number of things, I think, for what we've talked about before, with people being more aware that this content is available to students as a result of having spent so much time with them. In my opinion, it also has to do with that control piece. You can't control a whole lot's going around, but you can control exposure to that sort of thing. There may also, in my opinion, be a push for erasure there. If we don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. If we don't talk about it, then maybe people won't pick up, you know, those ideas or pick up that they feel that way. It's a complicated issue with a lot of root causes.
I'm thinking about what the author might think, or what occurs to the author who is behind the book. And then Pen America is saying that an author who is either female or a non-white author faces more book challenges than a white male author. And I'm just wondering, through that lens of being the author, what can you tell us there?
Sure. I think that it's different for every author. For some authors, I think whenever their book is banned or challenged, it's like, hey, I made it. You know? I wrote this thing and it definitely had an impact because people are looking at what I have written and it's causing something positive, something negative, doesn't matter. It's getting people talking. Some authors are deeply impacted with sadness as a result, because they've poured their soul out to try to give representation to these people in their characters in the book. And all of a sudden people are trying to keep it out of the hands of the people that they know need it most. And some people just get fired up and angry. You know, how dare you try to erase these characters that are meant to help people, that are meant to show that people belong and that are meant to facilitate discussions about these very important issues.
Talking with Stephanie Warden on book banning, she is Associate Director, Information Literacy Librarian at UW-Superior. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Stephanie, my 10-year-old and I are reading Harry Potter now. We're both going through it, reading it aloud each night. And I keep thinking, here we are in book three. How did these books, why was there such a backlash to this series and to these books? It kind of keeps going through my head as we go through each book, and I'm just not seeing it. What happened there with Harry Potter books?
Yeah, it's been a few years, but if I recall correctly, especially in the early times, it was about the witchcraft portion, that there were spells and things in it that could be repeated, and the witchcraft was entwined with differing religious views.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, it seems like there was maybe some coming-of-age content that was picked on. But yeah, primarily, I think it had to do with the world building in which there were wizards and witches doing things.
I wonder how it's viewed now. I mean, we've had some years since the series came out. Does that evolve, or do you still see some of that backlash?
There's still some of that backlash, some of the original, but now there's additional because of some of the statements that the authors made about trans rights and things of that nature that add a whole separate lens to view the work through. It's changed, but it's evolved. Mm-hmm. It hasn't gone away.
Your lens into book banning was through Toni Morrison, The Bluest Eye. Mine too. I read this in high school, and the book was published in 1970, has appeared on several book ban lists over the years. What can you tell us about reading this book and about what has since been said about The Bluest Eye and Toni Morrison?
I can tell you that I picked it up because our librarian at the high school had put it on a table with a number of other books that had been flagged for her to read, which I didn't recognize at the time, but was probably a challenge. So that's the reason I discovered that book, is it was just sitting out there on the table, and I just kind of quietly grabbed it and, you know, checked it out. But reading it, it was just a devastating experience. There's a lot about sexual trauma, a lot about overcoming your circumstances and what it does to you, and the experience of being treated that way. And of course, from a person of color's perspective. And it was not something that I had been exposed to previously. I grew up in a predominantly, you know, middle class to blue collar area where there were not many, many people of color to talk with or to learn from. So this book was really my first introduction into all of that goes on. And I've been forever grateful for that, even though it was a hard book, devastating book to read. It really supercharged my empathy, my ability to think outside of my own bubble.
Stephanie Warden, Associate Director, Information Literacy Librarian at UW-Superior, helping us to understand the tensions around banning books, hearing how you see this issue in our country or at your local library. Call in with how you feel, what you've experienced, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Stephanie Warden here on the Ideas Network. Books are being challenged at a pace not seen in decades. We're learning about book bans, why the American Library Association says it's unprecedented. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The most recent targeted books are about race and gender, sexuality. I'm thinking about my entree into banned books. That was through Catcher in the Rye, Beloved by Toni Morrison, as we were talking about. And don't forget Judy Blume in the mix. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. That was controversial in my time. Still time to add your voice with what banning books means for you, our youth in particular, 800-642-1234. Stephanie Warden is Information Literacy Librarian at UW-Superior's Library with us for about 9 more minutes. John is joining us from Richland Center with a question. Hi, John.
Hi. James Joyce in 1930 made this book called Ulysses. Mm-hmm. Why did they censor it?
Thank you, John, for that question. Stephanie, any ideas?
I didn't read Ulysses myself. I do remember that it was a stream of consciousness narrative, which can be, difficult to follow. But I also remember some talk about there was some sexual content in it, but I have no idea what the nature of that was. So I'm not 100% on that one.
All right, John. Thank you, though, for that question. We also, hearing from Allison in North Prairie, sent an email. And Allison served as a smaller town library director in the past and said their team policies in place about challenges and bannings and concerned citizens who can talk with staff about their concerns, that having a strong policy in place and procedures have really helped. And Allison went on to say that it's only sometimes that books were moved from the children's section to the adult section, but rarely, they said, would they move something off the shelf. What do you see Allison's point there?
Oh, yeah, of course. The ideal situation is to not remove the book, to find some sort of workaround, some sort of solution. And as long as you've got people behind you who will back you up on that and support your decisions, that's the way to go. In some places, the support is stronger than others. It's difficult for some libraries, for example, to work against if their library board would prefer the book to be gone, or if they don't have a supportive director. That can be problematic in those cases. But absolutely, that would be the ideal scenario, is to not remove the book if at all possible.
We had this explosion, as you said, in 2021 of book bans. What do you anticipate for coming years with the banning of books and the challenges?
In my opinion, I don't even know. I can't even conjecture. It was such an explosion from 2020 to 2021. I think a lot of that will depend on our climate, both the political and the financial, and all sorts of things are going to play into it. It is my sincere hope that doing things like this, where we are having these discussions, talking about how important it is to consider books and to not ban them, will have an effect, that the work of the Office of Intellectual Freedom, the American Library Association, will bring new light to all these things, and we won't have to worry about it as much. But
I wonder how much attention do book banning or book bans get compared to other forms of media, like films, filmmaking?
Yeah, there are films. I mean, films and books are, kind of comparable when it comes to whether or not people want them off of the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting that we talk about books. Books have a much longer history, a more venerable history, I suppose you could say, of being taken out or being challenged, whereas we don't see movies as much. With movies, we think, oh, there's already a rating system. This is rated G. So we kind of had that parental guidance thing built in. So I wonder, I don't know for sure, but I wonder if that contributes to fewer movies being, targeted, because they already have like a warning label.
There is already a rating system. Yes. Yeah. Let's go to Karen now in Madison. Karen, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. When you were talking about the empathy with the books, they are a powerful tool for that. But this very big ideological divide between those who are like, yeah, let's read all the books and get all the empathy, and those who believe that reading these ideas is like breathing poison air. I grew up in a very conservative religious tradition where you didn't want to go outside of the faith and read anything that might challenge what you're being taught. So I think any ideas on how to get around that problem for sharing these books?
Oh, Karen, that is such a good question. And just the words that you use there, poison air. Stephanie?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Personally, in my role, my capacity as an information literacy librarian, my opinion, my personal opinion is that it's important to teach people in general that if you are a part of something that is asking you not to bring in new material or question the beliefs that they hold, then it's important that you evaluate why that is and make your critical, do a critical analysis of that to determine what is the problem with bringing in new information and is that really a problem? Just daring to defy by reading those books can be, I mean, that can be the thing that kind of sets your mind free. But it's difficult to get in that way, because if you've already been told you shouldn't listen to the outside because we're the ones giving you the accurate information, then it's almost impossible to break that hold.
Karen, thank you. Larry now in La Crosse. Larry, hi, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling because there are certain individuals that think it's their right to limit what other people can read. And at my wife's library, they would take a book that they didn't like and they would hide it behind other books on the shelf. So as far as the library knew, the book was still in the library, but it was hidden from anybody picking it up.
Larry, thank you. Stephanie, have you heard of instances of this?
Oh, yeah, that's a common tactic. That and checking it out for the entire, you know, if it's a school library for the semester and keeping it until the very last day, then returning it and checking it out again when students return. That's a fun thing to interpret, because obviously if it's in lost status, so if it's hidden for long enough and it's noticed that that it's marked, then, well, that's a book that's been stolen. So that's probably a really good book. You know, you can interpret that data as saying, oh, people want that book, so you buy another copy, that kind of thing. So that can backfire. But yeah, that absolutely happens.
You have to,
that and defacing the materials.
Oh, goodness. And you really have to keep an eye then on your stacks and making sure that they're there for your patrons.
Right. It's our responsibility. We're stewards of the resources that we buy for our patrons. And we take that pretty seriously. So we do try to watch out for things like that. But in a collection of so many hundreds of thousands of volumes, it can be difficult to keep track of all that.
Stephanie, thank you so much for this conversation. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for having me. This was great.
Stephanie Warden is Associate Director and Information Literacy Librarian at the Jim Dan Heal Library at UW-Superior. We have a link to the ALA's special report. It's called The State of Libraries 2022. You can find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.